Hey, welcome to Car Guy Confessions, brought to you by ARP. I'm Jeff Smith. This is my car buddy Cam Benty and car builder Steve Strope, and we're going to tell you some stories. Welcome to another episode of Car Guy Confessions with Jeff Smith. We want to thank our sponsors, ARP-Bolts.com, and of course our friends at the Grand National Roadster Show. That's where we are.
Yes.
You know, in the past we were in this little back room, which was kind of fun, but it was hard to find.
Yeah.
And now, you know, this is like we got... This corner
of building 7.
Yeah. So, Jeff Smith,
Roger Lee,
Ironworks,
and
you've got a car here for Sloniker, correct?
I have a car here for the Sloniker.
Yeah, we went and looked at it. I walked through before I knew even you were coming by.
Yeah,
and I'm walking by the 35.
Yep,
and it was like, yikes, this thing is. I mean, I'm not a street rod guy.
Yeah.
But I walked by the car and stopped and looked at it and went, I need to spend some time on this car. So tell us a little bit about it.
Well, first of all, it's for a great customer of ours, Greg, that we've built many cars for.
Uh-huh.
And it's probably one of the third cars we started, and it's probably the, I don't know, 10th or 12th car we finished for him. So
okay.
It's been in the works for a
wow.
while.
Wow, so he's a good customer.
Great customer. Great guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just wanted to build a really, most of the cars we built are all drivers and meant to be driven. And he's puts a lot of miles on his cars.
Uh-huh.
I don't even know how you can put that many miles in a year on this many cars. But he does.
Uh-huh.
And he wanted to build originally wanted to build something that was really nice.
Okay.
And I think we got probably met that goal and a little more.
Yeah.
And so we're just here to show it off because this is kind of the place where you would show something like that off to unveil it and start its life on the show circuit.
Yeah, but it's built to be driven. It is built to be driven.
Because it's really nice.
Some cars aren't necessarily built to be driven, right?
Yeah, it's definitely built to be driven.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a straight axle front, solid axle rear, it's all those things. But it's
traditional
got torsion
hot
bars.
Rod.
Very traditional. It's got torsion bars. It's got great quality shocks on it. Everything is meant to be there. It's just whether you can listen to all the rock tinks against the bottom of those fully polished.
Knowing what that means.
Pretty, you know, the amount of effort that was put into the paint job and everything underneath.
Yeah.
For today.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're going to do. Our intention is to go to the Gathering of the Rock at the end of this year, which is whatever, September, October.
Okay.
We drove it in 22 in bare metal on their reliability run.
Okay.
So we drove it then, and we intend to do the same thing now.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
We did a lot of tuning on the car when it was in bare metal to get a lot of baseline stuff. There's a few things that have changed because you take apart the stack injection unit. And, of course, the butterflies are a little bit different.
Right,
you got little things to adjust here and there to get all that back synced.
How difficult is that to do? Did you balance that thing out? I mean,
Mikey, my guy's really good at it.
Okay, yeah.
So, and then we bring in Tom, the tuner that we have, and he really kind of makes us look good.
Small block Chevy, right?
It's a very elaborate small block Chevy.
Okay, okay.
Yes.
Some details? Because I'm an engine guy.
Okay, so... We wanted to take all the stuff off the engine block that we weren't using.
Okay.
So, like, the original ones just had the front mounts.
Right.
To mount off what the power steering bolt, pump, whatever those
Right. I think well, those initially, are that was for mounts for 55, 57 Chevys.
So, we have an engine mount that just mounts to those.
Okay.
And so, well, in the sprint car world, they will take a Brodix block.
Yeah.
And they will machine those blocks to lose 60 pounds.
Yeah.
Which is really incredible.
Oh, yeah. That is impressive.
Well, I got with those guys because for like $600, they'll do it. And I told them all the stuff I wanted, all the stuff I wanted to lose, and all the stuff I wanted to keep.
Okay.
So we only kept the bosses and bungs on the engine that we were going to use.
You were going to use.
And then I really liked the style of the screw-in freeze plugs instead of the brass press-in ones.
Right.
And so we kind of ran with those things, but it's a one-piece engine. It's and so we had to make an oil pan that was go to a one-piece, but looked like the original. You know
the
what
old
I'm talking
style
about?
Two-piece rear mainsail.
It looks proper.
Sure.
And so we did a lot of work to do that. We used the Trick Flow heads that were designed for the one-piece motors that have the camel hump bump on the front.
They're DH head.
It just makes them look like that.
More traditional,
And so we did a lot of stuff to maintain that stuff.
Excellent.
So it's not that it's some super high revving monster. It's just a good running motor. We put a little bigger cam in it, so it sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just meant to be driven.
Yeah.
Probably the horsepower level doesn't even matter.
Right, exactly. And my feel of this is that nobody likes the LS motors because they're ugly. But it's kind of funny how back when when I was at a hot rod back in the 80s and 90s that everybody hated small block Chevy because it was ubiquitous, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody was using it. And now the LS has come and sort of displaced it, that now the small block Chevy is
seen more as a traditional engine now.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so for us, we do a lot of cars with LT engines.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. We're even further down the road because there is, I used to think, man, the LS runs so good. How can the LT be better? Well,
right.
It is.
It is better. There's, it is quite a bit
there's
better.
There's mileage better and there's startup, how quick it starts up.
Sure.
There's a lot of things in that. The computer's just a lot more advanced. The transmissions that go behind the LT are a lot better.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the LT itself has small changes, but it's all the other stuff that goes with
so
it.
So a lot of the cars that you're building at your shop at Ironworks, we're running LT engines now?
We do a lot of LT4s.
Okay.
We do these production Chevelles, which mm-hmm. we probably don't have time to get into all that, but we
you've got one in your booth, right?
I have one in our
booth. The black car.
That is number two. We have delivered four of those in the past year or so.
Wow.
That have gone to customers. We have three more in the works, and our plan is just to build this very high-quality, reliable, meant-to-be-driven Chevelle. Like,
okay.
You couldn't put mechanically better parts in it.
Okay.
From what it is. It's got, you know, the best shocks and independent rear suspension and
so that car's got independent rear suspension in it?
It's got independent
wow,
rear suspension.
Nice.
The seats are sunk down. The interior is all made out of carbon, so it's
okay.
Not cheesy plastic crap.
Okay.
There's a lot of stuff that if you don't really know what you're looking at, you're like, oh, it just looks like a regular Chevelle. Well, it ain't.
Yeah. Okay.
Most of them have 10-speed automatics. Most
okay.
of them, they do, you know, they just do a lot of those things very well.
They're okay. I haven't driven one, but I've heard the 10-speeds are really nice.
That I am a manual transmission guy,
uh-huh.
and a 10-speed will change your mind a little.
Really? Really? It's
just with the right tuning,
uh-huh.
just with those things where it really puts, you just really feel it working because it has that, it cuts the power
mm-hmm.
when it shifts.
Okay.
That's why they can run 10-speeds in that transmission that's about the same size, so it cuts
yeah.
power to shift, and you just feel it ramp in
mm-hmm.
every time it shifts.
Yeah, because it's a clutch-to-clutch type transmission.
It is, but it cuts the power for
cuts
the
power.
Split second and then eases the power back in.
Okay, so it's more or less seamless.
It is very seamless.
Yeah,
very,
yeah.
If you mat it to the wood from a stoplight, it feels like the old rubber band cars from when you were a little kid, that it just continues to build speed.
Really? Really? Okay, almost feels like a CVT type of situation.
It almost feels like that,
okay.
but it never spins, it never shocks the tires.
Okay.
So,
you don't get that bang.
You don't get the chirp and the bang.
Yeah.
Which can be,
some
which
people,
can suck.
Yeah. Some
but
people
it can
would
also
like
make
that.
The car
yeah.
faster.
Right. So it's all comes to downs to.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
So
that sounds like fun.
So we do a lot of those things.
Okay. Now, so that those versions of those cars you're building, are they pretty much the same? Or,
they're very much the same, short of horsepower level, exterior colors you want, wheels
okay.
you want. We have a few different, another version coming. It's going to be a more modernized car that trying to cut weight from the cars and do
okay.
some, take some weight off the nose.
So whose IRS are you using?
We've just developed our own chassis that we're starting on the number six cars.
Okay.
That's a Roadster Shop chassis,
mm-hmm.
but it's a unibody chassis.
Okay.
So you will cut the, you'll cut the floors out.
Okay.
Slide in this chassis that has everything integrated it into it from the Roadster Shop. It's something that we kind of worked with them to private label the design
mm-hmm.
to where the transmission tunnel, the drive shaft tunnel, the floor mounts,
okay.
and everything is in this chassis. You slide it into the car. It gives you more headroom in the car.
Okay.
It allows you to put a 7-foot guy in the car if you
uh-huh.
want, because
okay.
basketball players like Chevelles.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we've just been developing those things to speed up the process. It makes the car quieter. I think it's going to make them a little lighter because now you – the chassis weighs a little more than what the chassis did.
Right.
But now you no longer have the floor because the chassis is the floor.
Okay.
And everything bolts to it. So the fuel tank bolts into the trunk.
Okay.
And everything welds into the car and the wheel tub's set right to the others.
Wow.
So you just get this chassis. The end goal here on number eight will be that the chassis arrives powder coated.
Okay.
We'll sand the rails off the powder coating, weld those to the car, and then everything is prepped and done.
Wow.
And so that'll allow us to turn the cars around quicker.
Yeah, and which makes them more affordable, right? Because you can sell it that way.
The chassis is more expensive, so
right.
you have that part, but it cuts labor out.
Your labor
biggest
costs.
Thing I'm
sure.
trying to do is just speed up the process.
Uh-huh.
We're down to about 8 months we can turn one around.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
Which was, we did a 7442
uh-huh.
that 10-speed LT4, a lot of custom interior stuff for the Olds.
Mm-hmm.
And we still turned it around in 8 months and took
wow.
it on a road tour.
Wow. Wow. That sounds like fun.
It is fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And an IRS, Now they can handle really
nicely. It just
really
rides really nice.
Yes, yes.
It's great for the open road. Mm-hmm. It's great just for comfort. You know, the seats that we put in it are takeouts from late model Camaros.
Okay.
So you get a lot of the power seats. You get a lot of the foam and stuff that GM designed for ride comfort, because the seat cushioning is also a big determining factor mm-hmm. for the ride quality of the car as well.
Yeah. So this is strictly now for just second generation Chevelles? Or have you done an earlier version, like a 64, 67?
I would love to do the 66 because that's my favorite. But
me too.
The 60, the 70 to 72, I can just get them down low and do all those things much easier because there's just more room in them than there is in the 66.
Oddly, with a shorter wheelbase than the early ones. Yeah,
but the distance from the firewall to the axle center line in the front on those 66, 60, actually all those early ones, just makes those cars very hard to deal with.
Yeah.
The dashes are so concave. Right. And the firewall is so close. Like right. you run out of room to put all that crap in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's exciting.
It is.
So what other cars are you building at the shop?
We have are you ready for this? 1978 Mercedes.
Really?
That at first when the guy came to me, you're like, wow, seriously, you want to do this? And I got to talking with the customer and he's really just a great guy. And we have gotten to the point now where we've made carbon front valances and billet bumpers, and we're getting ready to design a new interior for the car. We put an LT4 with a 10-speed and Corvette suspension up front, and basically the Art Morrison IRS in the rear. We grafted all that into the unibody of the car, and it sits super low. It looks... It'll change your mind on Mercedes. There's a lot of guys who came when a lot of my customers when the car came in, they're like, what are you doing with that thing? And now they're like, man, that thing's pretty cool. And it's really, it used to look like the Pope should own it because it's the four-door.
Oh, so it's a four-door.
It's a four-door.
Okay. Okay.
But it's long and slim. And when you set it down on the ground and you put 19s and 20s on it, and it looks the part.
Yeah.
Like it's very aggressive.
Yeah.
So we're trying to get that thing done for SEMA and just a lot of other stuff. We've got a Nova we've been working on for a long time. We got a Ranch Wagon coming out, a 66 Chevelle that we've cut to the – we've kind of fixed all the weird things about the 66 Chevelle on that stuff at the bottom of the window, some of the taillight things. Just tried to do a lot of nice little details of not overdoing it.
Kind of smooth it out. Without going over the top.
Just enough, and mix paint did the paint on that one. So paint job will be on spot on. It's just black. It's got some bronze magnesium type wheels on it to give it that 60s kind of vibe.
Okay.
And just super low slung and black interior. And we wanted to call it Wesley because it's black on black. And he always say, what do you say in the movie? Always bet on black.
Always bet on black.
And that was what you can't really beat a black Chevelle.
Yeah. Always, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's like, you know, the little black dress for the women, right? No, yeah,
it was going to work out good.
Yeah. So. Cool. So how'd you get started in this business?
Always been into cars.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse James's videos had a huge thing on me watching him do that stuff. And I always just wanted to have a shop, and really, I got fired from a job I had, and had an option to go get another job as a young man, or go try my own thing.
Okay,
and,
where was this?
This was in Bakersfield.
In Bakersfield, okay,
yeah, same place.
Yeah,
I just took the leap, and I just worked.
How long ago was that?
24 years ago.
24 years ago. Wow. Okay.
And just I was 24 years old. Wow. 48 years old now.
Yeah.
And just kept showing up every day, and you'd work and work and work and work, I didn't want anything else. That's all I wanted to do was work on cars, and I spent a long time trying to learn the business side of it.
Okay.
You don't really know that stuff when you get in it, because you're just blinded by I want to mess with cars.
And that's probably a big deal, isn't it? You know, car guys, you know how to build a car, but you may not necessarily know how to run a business.
Yes, and that's... Okay. That's where what leads us into today of the business classes that we do.
Oh.
Because years ago, I wanted to be able to ask guys questions of how you're doing this.
Okay.
And so there's a group that we've created on Facebook that's a completely private group called the Fabricators Union.
Okay.
And so it's by invite only. And that's been successful in kind of doing that. But a lot of guys don't want to ask questions and look like they don't understand, even though we all know they don't understand.
Sure. Sure.
And so the thought was to start doing these classes, because as I got older, and I people would just ask me questions.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Hey, you seem
hey,
like,
you seem like you're successful. You seem like you, how'd you get there?
Seem like you have more than $2 in your pocket and you have a new shirt on.
Uh-huh.
So what are you, what's your secret? And so it just kind of started with that. And I uh-huh. developed some curriculum and I sat on it for probably a year.
Uh-huh.
And didn't think I had the confidence. I didn't think I was qualified to do it. And then someone mentioned to me, well, who is?
Yeah.
And so I put a thing out to do my first class, and I sold it out, like, instantly.
Wow.
Had we limited the class to...
In Bakersfield.
In Bakersfield, okay. At my shop.
Uh-huh.
I had people from all over the country. There was Kansas, Texas. Most people were from... the East Coast
okay.
that came.
Okay.
And so just getting that and doing that, and then I got to the end of the class and asked them what they thought, because mm-hmm. I'm not a speaker.
Yeah.
And they all were like, oh, this is amazing. Like, it's changed everything of what they were trying to do.
Okay.
And just kind of put thoughts behind it. And I've always thought that it's really just something with – it's just common sense.
Sure. Yeah.
But because it comes from somebody who's been through it,
mm-hmm.
guys that are in the business,
you learn it the hard
more.
Way. Yeah,
because you know, really, you got to learn to say no to the wrong people.
Right.
You got to
right.
learn to spot the wrong people.
Yep.
And you've
yep.
got to learn how to price your business and have confidence in what you do,
mm-hmm.
and also understand that you shouldn't be billing people with under the eyes of your wallet, and understand that if you put in 1,000 hours in something because it was terribly difficult,
yeah.
that you should be getting
sure.
close to somewhere 1,000 hours.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
how to not just lose your money on all the other stuff on the sanding discs and the sanding mm-hmm. paper and the argon and
right.
all these other consumables that are in the background that cost all the money.
That's all the overhead, yeah.
And so we try to go through those things to help the owner create value.
Okay.
I went through some issues with a customer in 2016, and we kind of ended on a sour note. And 7 years later, I wound up building him another car.
Okay.
And... now I can see what I didn't do back then that I do now that
okay.
makes him want to build more cars now.
Okay.
Because my process is different
okay.
and my communication is different.
That's really interesting.
And so, yeah. And just seeing those things, and then he comes back and is commenting on things. He's not saying, oh, you know, 2016 sucked and now this mm-hmm. is, but he's commenting that, oh, okay, I get what's going on. Because a lot of builders leave their customer in the dark.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're like, I'll just call you when I need the money, and mm-hmm. you come when it's done, and I'll yeah. do everything, and hopefully you like
and
it.
Don't bother me.
And don't bother me. And that's not the case. You need
yeah.
to sell the process to them and,
yeah. Yeah.
and let them come along and enjoy the process,
mm-hmm.
because that's the same passion that makes us make stupid decisions as yep. car guys and business owners
yeah.
is also the same passion that these guys want to experience in having the cars,
okay.
because there's something in our lives that uh-huh. makes us want to be car guys.
Right, right. So how would somebody get in contact with you?
Just on my website.
On your website, mm-hmm. which is?
Ironworkspeedandcustom.com.
Speedandcustom.com. Okay.
Ironworkspeedandcustom.
Excellent, excellent. That sounds like a wonderful opportunity. So how many classes have you done?
We've done 8 classes. We've had over 100 students.
Wow.
We have another class here at the end of February. I think we're going to tone it down on the classes and focus on 20 groups.
Okay.
Which is kind of a standard they do in the body shop world or the car dealer world.
Okay.
And they try to put like 20 dealerships or 20 body shops together and they compare notes.
Uh-huh.
And so we're kind of hoping Troy Gudgel, who is from BBT Fab,
mm-hmm.
has been with me since some of the earlier classes. And we're looking at kind of doing that on a monthly thing with the guys who have already taken the first class
uh-huh.
and spending time with them to help develop. Because you can only learn so much in a weekend.
Sure.
And as much as I'm not a huge fan of Zoom, because that's just not my style.
Yeah, just, it's not personal.
Even though it's a
enough.
Normal thing anymore, we're mm-hmm. going to do, that's what we're going to do, is have these monthly meetings through Zoom, which we're going to put guys in similar shops. You know, maybe they have 6 to 10 employees. They've been uh-huh. in business here. This is kind of where their gross revenues are, and try to group them together. And we'll meet with them on this Friday for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
The next Friday might be a whole bunch of guys with super small shops. And then the third Friday might be the guys with the bigger shops that uh-huh. are trying to get those together. And we will work together to bring the unity. So, because this industry is not as cutthroat as it used to be. There,
mm-hmm.
everybody was at everybody's throat. Now
okay.
you just have the guys who think they want to prove themselves that are trying to cut everyone's throat, when a lot of the bigger players are all buddies anymore.
Sure.
And so they share things, and they're texting pictures of their latest projects to
mm-hmm.
their friends instead of just waiting, trying to cut each other's heads off at the show and hoping
right.
that their stuff is better than that, and
right.
and really celebrating each other's cars instead of trying to make it a competition.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's kind of what we're hoping to do to to just make all that better. And I've always looked at it as that rising tides raise all ships.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's so fantastic. Yeah.
And it's just super cool to see these guys. There's just been lots of guys who have come to the classes and see them learn that they don't have to work 7 days a week, that they're probably not as effective working 7 days a week. There is other things in life. You know, you don't need your wife to divorce you to realize that you've chosen your business over her.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want
exactly
winning an award is not more important than raising good kids.
Right.
And trying to get a lot of those things in there to get these guys to understand, because they just get in the trenches and there's so much to do and they're so
absolutely
not prepared.
Yep.
And how
I made that mistake as an editor, you know, put everything into being the editor of a magazine, thinking I was doing the right thing, and it cost me and it was not good.
Yeah.
You know, and had I known that, I could have toned it back 10% and everything would have probably been fine.
It would have. And you'll probably get more done.
Yeah, probably.
And you'll have clearer thoughts. You can be more creative. Mm-hmm. You can do a lot of those things.
Sure.
And that's what we try to really instill in these guys.
That's fantastic.
Take a little chill. Learn to say no to the wrong guys.
Mm-hmm.
Pick your lane. If you're not good at this, then don't do that. Do the things you're strong at.
Yeah, do the things you're good at.
And don't do the things you're not, and find good people who are good at the things you're not, and work with those people and really create unions through those businesses to make each other shine.
Yeah.
And you know, help develop each other's products, and you know, because you don't have to try and make every single thing anymore. There's a lot of junk out there still, but there's a lot of good parts out there that other builders are making.
Yeah,
and support those other builders. Uh-huh. Support those guys who are making small product lines. And trying to make things that you can't buy somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Do you make some of your own parts?
We have some. I have some for our Chevelles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on some other stuff that kind of carries over. It's kind of a newer thing for me. Years ago, I tried to sell chassis. I tried to sell valve covers. I did a ton of shows. I had a big rig and traveled the country and didn't get bumpkiss out of it.
Yeah.
And just realized I was just kind of doing everything half-ass.
Right. Okay.
And so I sold the big rig and sold the chassis line and stopped making. I still have like half a dozen valve covers of these badass billet things that I never got around to putting a part number and putting them on my website. And then somebody made something very similar in China for a third of 10% of the cost.
Of course.
And so, but I'm trying to do those little things. And so I think there's guys of us that we're kind of going, hey, let's, you know, you're going to make these kind of parts and I'm going to buy those parts from you. And hey, Roger's going to make these parts from, let's try and do this together.
Yeah. And work together on this whole thing.
And work together on those things. And
yeah, it's more efficient.
And just, and all try to just help each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's some of what I hope the industry can come to, of just making, at least from the car builder side, you know, of just making good parts.
Yeah.
And because there's still a lot of junk out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff that shouldn't be sold.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and a lot of people are afraid to say that nowadays.
Uh-huh.
But there's just a lot of stuff where we need to figure out how to, you know, make our lives easier. And
sure,
on the front lines for the builders, they're typically held to the standard of warranting something that a manufacturer won't warranty.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wind up having to put the parts on it because of whatever reason it is.
Yeah,
You know, and so just learning the good parts to use and the stuff you're not supposed to use.
And I would think that also, like you talked about, you know, choosing the right customer, because you can't, hopefully you hire the right, you work for the right guy that doesn't expect this car to ride like a Mercedes. You know,
but
it could, but they don't necessarily have these ridiculous expectations. I've had readers that said, well, you know, this modification doesn't work because it doesn't feel right. It's like, it's not your wife's Honda, you know, it's a hot rod.
Yeah.
So, you know,
but that's also not an excuse to have this pile of junk.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, and so it's a reason that you want to do the research and understand that the cheapest part isn't always a satisfactory part.
Even. Right, right.
And so you tend to get what you pay for
and try to
get those things together. But a lot of it comes into the process of having the customer understand that just because the car is sitting here at the show that it's not done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that 35 that we have over there has like 40 feet on it.
Okay.
Like, it's not ready to be driven.
Yeah.
Like, not at all.
And that I think comes from the TV shows where they get in, they finish it, they turn the key and start up. It's done. It's
But that's also the same thing we try to work on in the class, is that you can't just price the car to where you make it to the show and you're 10% over budget at the show, and then the customer just thinks, oh, well, it's done. And you've used the words, oh, it's done. And you're like, but it's not done.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to, if we're driving this car and got to do this, it's going to take a while to work the bugs out.
So how much time do you think you spend? Do you have like a, an estimate? You know, it's like
some cars fall together and they work
they
great.
Work really well.
And then there's other cars
that you struggle with.
I had a car not too long ago that the Oldsmobile that we built. Mm-hmm. We built that car in 8 months. We've used all those parts a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm. And you know how they should work together.
And I've had 3,000 miles on the car because I drove it on a road tour.
Uh-huh.
So drove it. I drove it all around before we left, and then we drove it all the way from Denver to South Dakota, wow. all the way back to Bakersfield, California.
Wow.
Didn't have one issue the whole way.
Uh-huh.
Drove it around a little bit more. Wasn't after all those miles and some shock testing, we did some revalving and some things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the day I sent it to the owner,
oh no,
the alternator took a dump and locked up. Kicked the belt. The belt tore off all the cam sensor, all the sensors on the front of the motor. Did thousands of dollars of damage to the car. And you're like, it's got 3,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
Like, how could you have known that?
Yeah.
But it was just dumb luck.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that worked out good for me, in hindsight, is that the owner who got the car, yes, he's not excited that the car broke, but mm-hmm. I sent my guy over the next day mm-hmm. with an alternator I had on a different car
mm-hmm.
and some parts. He fixed it right there, and I got him fixed, and he's back on the road the next day.
Yep.
And I'm not going, well, if you send me the car back, we'll see if we can get it fixed. If they're going to warrant, I didn't care about all that.
Yeah.
I'm just getting the car fixed.
Yeah.
I'm getting it sent on the road. But you would have thought, I mean, why would something have to,
why would it fail out?
Why would an alternator lock up after 3,000 miles?
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
Yeah. No.
It's usually going to lock up in the first 20.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so why?
It's either going to fail right away or it's going to last for 100,000 miles. Yeah. Yeah.
And somehow, apparently, the nut was backing off because the manufacturer didn't put the washer in the box. And my guys didn't know that the washer was supposed to be in the box and it's not in the box and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's slowly over 3,000 miles. We think that's what it was.
Okay.
But everybody's like, well, I don't really know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I don't know. We'll just send you another one and shh, you know. And so, but I have the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got 4 hours of sending my guy to drive to go fix the car.
Yeah.
And I got the time you spent fixing the car and 4 hours to come back. But that's how you build customers.
Right. Because he knows now that you took care of him and he'll be back.
And he knows I'm going to stand behind the car, that I care about the result of what he's doing.
Yeah.
And so you're just putting that effort into those parts.
Yeah.
And then you can share that knowledge with other people to make their cars better. And,
You
know, but you just never know. Some cars are great.
Yeah.
Some cars are not. All of a sudden it drops a valve. Who knows?
Hey, we'd like to thank our sponsor, ARP-Bolts.com. We got a fantastic little backdrop here. They make an outstanding series of bolts, almost anything you would need for engines, chassis, things like that. In fact, we were at lunch today, and a guy asked you about the bolt on the back of your shirt, and I said, well, it's really about a head bolt. They neck the stem down of the bolt on a short small block Chevy head bolt, so the clamp load is even across three different head bolt lengths on a small block Chevy. And, you know, so that's the kind of technology that you get out of ARP. And we've all got stories on all that stuff.
But, for a translation of what he said, call ARPbolts.com.
but the message is that you can't get any better than that.
No, you cannot.
There you go.
Nope.
We'd like to thank our friends at InTheGarageMedia.com. They have three fantastic magazines. They've got Classic Truck Performance. They have Modern Rodding. And my favorite, All Chevy Performance, with my buddy Nick,
who's
the editor.
Biased.
So, yes, of course. But it's a fantastic book. They're doing print media, which is, of course, our favorite. So in color and everything.
Yes.
And you can get your car on the cover of one of those books, which is a fun deal.
Great tech.
You know, not always written by me.
Famous people.
That's right.
Just pick it up and read it.
At InTheGarageMedia.com. And they're our friends, and they will thank you.
Exactly.
Because I had an issue one time with my Chevelle. I just kept eating alternators, and I kept talking to the alternator manufacturers, Power Master, and they're like, we're not really sure. This is what happened to it, but we're not really sure what killed it. And what the solution was, I had to change the entire wiring harness in the car because it still had an original wiring harness in it. Okay. I never really found whatever the voodoo was in there, you know, but I haven't had a problem since. So there you go.
I mean, years ago, I had this relay panel that we bought. And I had installed it in three cars,
mm-hmm.
and we're having all these weird things. And so I would call them, and they would talk me through it, and they're like, oh, it's got to be the key switch. We'll send you another key switch. You put that key switch in, same problem. And it's always like it was moving around, because what it would do is that we had four things on the relay, the airbag compressors, the fuel pumps, the EFI, and the dash were all on four relays.
Mm-hmm.
And what it, because of the relay panel not having separate power sources from the battery,
okay,
the relay panel had one common power source.
Okay.
And so whichever ones would latch, the other ones might not latch.
Really?
And so you had this miraculous, weird problem. Sometimes the airbags wouldn't work. Sometimes this wouldn't work. Sometimes they'd all work and you could actually drive it. And it was actually here at Grand National one year that I figured out that what it was, because I shut it off and you're like, oh, the fuel pumps aren't working. Turn it on, turn it back on. Oh, now the airbag's not working. Turn it off, turn it.
Yeah.
And the thing, and you're like, all right, I got the car started, but it won't air up. Oh, crap. And so, and I call them and they're like, oh, we've never had that happen before. And I'm like, well, that's weird. I'm having three cars that are doing it.
Oh,
I've only bought this part three times.
Yeah.
And I'm trying it on these three
cars.
We've
never had that problem
before. Never had that problem. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. and the solution was to feed each relay separately.
The solution was, yes, the solution was to get rid of the panel.
Yeah. Because
their solution was to put timed relays on it. I'm like, so I got to put relays on the relay panel.
There's a good idea.
Thanks.
There's a good idea.
And they wonder why cars are expensive.
Yeah, and people I don't think understand, this is something brand new that you're building for the first time. Even if it's something that you now have a lot of experience with, it's really not, because your development time that you pay, that's why we pay a lot of money for brand new cars, because they're spending millions of dollars to do development work.
Mm-hmm.
And your development is, I built this, let's see how far it goes.
And you have to do development on every car that we build.
Yeah, because they're all a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Man, you got to be brave to be a car builder
these days
because the complexity is so great. I mean, it used to be with an ignition switch, a battery, and a generator, and a gas tank, and a fuel pump, we're good to go. You know, a couple of taillight lenses.
Now it's a sensor that doesn't want to turn on a this and that to allow the injectors to fire, because who knows what.
Because it decided, I'm not working today.
It has a ground, but not enough ground.
Yeah. Yeah. Or not in the right place.
Yeah, or not in the right sequence, or, I mean.
Oh, my goodness.
Or it needs an update.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. So what first, is there like a car that you built in early days that kind of put you on the map?
It was my black truck.
Your black truck?
My black truck with the transaxle and the C6 drivetrain.
What, your pickup? Chevy
57
pickup?
57 Chevy truck.
Oh, okay.
It was everywhere.
Yeah?
Everywhere. I took it all over the place. I had a guy in my last class, which this really tripped me out, say he had a magazine something or another hanging on his wall when he was a kid.
Uh-huh.
Made me feel old, but it also was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Uh-huh. Sure.
And and that was probably the thing that put me on the map first. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
Cause you really are only as great as the last thing you've done.
Yep. Exactly.
And so that led to some other stuff, and just baby steps and baby steps and baby steps. And
yeah,
the point of me wising up and realizing I'm not really the guy at this point to have a parts line and market all over the country, and I'm just going to put my effort into getting the cars done the best I can as soon as I can is probably the best thing I can do. And that's just continuing to finish cars.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest thing I teach in the class, is it's not trying to go out and win the street machine and be a one-hit wonder.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to be Milli Vanilli from back in the day. And you sing a few songs and then you're gone. Like, finish cars.
Yeah.
That people know you finished cars. And
right,
wherever you're going to show them, whether it's Cars and Coffee locally, whether it's going to be in the magazine, whether it's going to be there, the biggest thing you can do is finish as many cars as you can and have them meet and just barely exceed the customer expectations.
Yeah, yeah.
It's more than likely you may build a car that's nicer than they want.
Uh-huh.
It may have a lot of these other things they don't want. And then you've built something they can't use.
Yeah.
And then something that's not what they intended.
Yeah.
And so the car becomes too nice for them to drive.
Yeah. Do you trim their expectations, and you know, to try to focus in on what's really important as opposed to these wild things that they might want to do? Does that fit back into, well, this may not be the right customer for me?
I've just gotten to the point that I can understand what they want to do, the questions they want to ask, and you're like, so if the paint turns out really nice, are you really going to drive it down the freeway? Are you really? Because you talk tough now.
I'm a victim of that because
I got
a really nice car. I don't want to drive it.
Yeah.
So I drive my beaters because I don't have to worry about them.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you just want to find, you know, what is it you really want to do? Do you want
to
go show it? Do you want to be competitive?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a difference between showing it and being competitive. Because you can go show something at a lot of shows and do really, you know, do you really care about trophies?
Mm-hmm.
Or
right.
Do you really want to spend all this money to get a $10 trophy?
A $10 plastic trophy.
Yeah,
right.
Is that really what you want? And then, you know, and then what is your level of good driving? Do you think your wife's Yukon drives really well, or do you want a sports car feel?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what is it that you want? Are you do you want something that's a solid axle car that feels a lot more like a soapbox derby car, or do you want something that feels more like a sports car? And,
yeah.
And do you want to work on the rattles, or you don't care? Are you ever going to roll the windows up? Are you, you know, what is your real expectation in doing that? And And with the amount of money you want to spend, can we achieve that expectation?
Okay. So it's really kind of an interview process with your
I think
potential.
I interview them more than they interview
you,
me.
You, yeah, yeah.
Because they're really, you know, most of them are all usually pretty gung-ho. And I'm the ones that's usually putting, because really at the end of the day, it all comes down to money.
Sure, yeah.
You can only do what, unless you're going to volunteer or give them free parts or, which, you know, I'm all down for helping things out. But there's a part too where most people just haven't even done the math of what a chassis costs,
right.
What an engine costs, the stuff you have to put on that engine. You know, nowadays you can't even really get an LT4 engine because they're just on eternal back order with GM. So
really?
Are we going to wait, or are we going to build one?
And I'm wondering, in fact, because with all this stuff with electric cars, you know, are they just not going to build any more of them?
Well, the story I've been told is the LT4s have all gone to the Escalade Vs. That they make all the money on,
because
they sell those now $180,000, basically souped up Suburbans.
Okay,
you know, and so they make all that extra money on those. So they're going to put those engines in there, and they're in limited supply.
So you might have to package your own version of an LT4.
Yeah, so I've been building my own to keep up with demand, which costs more money.
Sure. Sure.
But do you want to wait?
There's no alternative.
Do you want to wait a year to get one from GM, or do you want to just build one?
Yeah, yeah.
So we can have it and move on and get it going.
Mm-hmm.
So, but everything nowadays, when you're ordering chassis and ordering those things, it takes a while.
Sure. Oh yeah, yeah.
You're not going to be able to call a guy and be like, "Oh, I got the chassis here on the shelf, and here's the engine and trans, and we can start on it on Friday."
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. A lot to all this.
Oh man,
yeah,
it's a lot going on.
But you're still having fun.
Still having fun. Still get up at 3:45 every morning because I want to go to work.
Ooh, 3:45.
Just love it.
Yeah.
Just love
it. Yeah.
Just excited to go to work. I mean, that's the same thing here. I'm excited to get home tonight, and I want to hit it hard again tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's always been my.
Yeah.
I leave here. Usually, we don't have to tear down as much as we do tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we win or lose, I don't know.
Yeah.
And if we win, we have to, you know, we have to take pictures and smile and do all that, which takes time. And
sure.
If we lose, we'll have everything loaded up sooner, and I can probably
and
roll
get back
into
the
shop
road.
Sooner, and
yeah.
I can be working on getting, you know, working on what the next car.
Yep.
Because that's what myself and a lot of my guys are already excited to get the next one.
Yep. Cool. Well, thanks so much for helping
us
out here. This has been a lot of fun.
No problem.
Yeah.
Hopefully I didn't talk too much.
No, not at all. Not at all. Give your website address again.
www.ironworksspeedandcustom.com, which is the same for Instagram, same for Facebook, all those types of things.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
No problem.
If you like what we're doing here, we want to thank first our sponsors, arp-bolt.com, bolts, arp-bolts.com, and our friends at the show. So thank you again. And if you like what we're doing here, let us know, and we'll keep doing it for you.